In the recent negotiations over the state's $212 billion state budget, the most high-profile and controversial debate revolved around a $2.1 billion pot of money reserved for New Yorkers, mostly undocumented immigrants, who were excluded from federal pandemic benefits such as increased unemployment and stimulus checks. Ultimately, after intense lobbying by activists and a vocal outcry from Democrats in the state legislature, an excluded workers fund was included in the state budget. To explain who's eligible for the money and how much they'll get, why this is a smart use of funds, and much, much more, we spoke with Anu Joshi, Vice President of Policy at the New York Immigration Coalition. Welcome back to the show, Anu.
Thanks so much for having me. Happy to be here to talk about this.
Well, we're looking forward to diving in with you. So for most New Yorkers who lost their jobs or saw their income diminish during the pandemic, they were able to collect traditional state unemployment, and for many weeks there was a supplemental federal benefit too. On top of that, New Yorkers under a certain threshold have received three stimulus checks in the last year. For undocumented New Yorkers who lost work or their earnings decreased during the past year, what have they done to survive, and what assistance at the state or federal level have they been able to access, if any?
Just the same way everyone has struggled, undocumented workers and their families have struggled to try to make ends meet in this really challenging time. As you so rightfully pointed out, it's pretty shameful, but undocumented workers and their families were completely shut out of all of the federal government relief efforts. So those $1,400 checks that just went out, the $600 ones before that, they were completely shut out. And in fact, it was only with this most recent round of stimulus checks, this $1,400, that even the U.S. citizen kids of undocumented parents were able to access those checks. And so we've really seen families struggle to put food on the table, to make sure that people could get the health care that they need, that everyone was cared for. And they've been surviving the same way that they have been surviving, you know, for decades. It's a combination of community-based organizations and support from local efforts, you know, food banks here in New York City. Anyone is able to take advantage of the food banks that they had set up at schools at the beginning of the pandemic. But really, it's that they've just been struggling.
Is it your impression that the moratorium on evictions has been beneficial in any way, shape, or form? Or because this is a community that largely, you know, exists in the shadows and might be afraid of causing a stir, have there been instances that you're aware of where the eviction protections have been circumvented by landlords?
I think it's a little bit of both. I definitely know that undocumented families have been able to take advantage of the protections from eviction and will be eligible, we think, for rent relief. But you're absolutely right. And so often these are not on, so often, especially in New York City, but in other places across the state as well, these aren't on the books apartments, right? These are places where families that are struggling to make ends meet, you know, really have to take what they can get. And so aren't afforded all of the protections that, you know, folks that live in sanctioned apartments are receiving.
Besides New York, have any other states taken actions or are considering actions to help residents who are otherwise ineligible for federal pandemic aid?
Yeah, we've seen a mix. You know, I'm happy to and proud to say that New York's program that we just passed, the Fund for Excluded Workers, is really the first of its kind in the country and will provide the most support. But, you know, earlier at the end of last year, we saw California pass a program which provided $500 per adult. That reached only about 150,000 individuals, though. And when you're thinking about a state of California and what their undocumented population size is, that's a drop in the bucket. We have places in Oregon that tried to match what the federal government stimulus relief checks were. So that was about $1,700 per undocumented worker. And the same thing in Washington State. But this program, the Fund Excluded Workers program that was just passed, will really be the first of the kind in its country to provide these kind of similar unemployment benefits. in recognition of the work that undocumented immigrants in New York have provided.
Heading into the budget process, what sort of relief fund were advocates of an excluded fund hoping for in terms of funding, potential benefits, and eligibility criteria?
We had initially asked for $3.5 billion. Fiscal Policy Institute estimated that that's what it would take to ensure that we had a truly transformative budget, that everyone who needed access to these funds could get access to these funds. And, you know, unfortunately, the state passed the budget at $2.1 billion, which is still, you know, I want to underscore, is an incredible investment in our communities, but does fall short of making sure that we can meet everyone who has these incredible needs. That includes, you know, reducing the amount of money that undocumented workers and their families can get, tightening eligibility standards and the length of time that people can apply for. And also, crucially, at the last minute, the legislature eliminated the eligibility for recently incarcerated individuals, regardless of immigration status. And so there's still work to do, you know, to ensure that everyone has the support that they need in these challenging times.
You're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're breaking down funding in the state budget to provide unemployment benefits and stimulus checks to undocumented New Yorkers. And our guest is Anu Joshi of the New York Immigration Coalition. So it's my understanding that there's sort of a two-tiered structure for benefits. Can you walk me through the different amounts of money that people are potentially eligible to receive and what qualifies them for those two different tiers?
So there's some basic eligibility requirements for either tier. You have to be a current resident of New York, and you have to have lived here since at least March 27th of 2020. So, you know, right when the pandemic began. You have to have lost wages or income after February 2020. And that's either because, you know, you lost work because of COVID or there was a COVID-related death or disability of the major breadwinner in the house. You have to prove that you were not eligible for unemployment insurance or other federal COVID-related income relief, which undocumented workers, as you pointed out, are not. They have not ever been eligible. And you can't have earned more than $26,000 in the 12 months before this law went into effect. And so this is really geared for low-wage workers who have had a significant loss of income. And so if you can meet those eligibility requirements, it really comes down to what documents you have in order to prove your loss of income over the last year that will set up whether you are able to qualify for Tier 1, which is a total of $15,600 in benefits, which is about equal to $300 a week for 52 weeks. Or if you don't have as many robust documentation, you could qualify for Tier 2, which is $3,200 total benefits, which is equivalent to the sum of the three federal stimulus checks that went out over the last year. So to qualify for Tier 1, you know, the state has put out some general eligibility requirements to qualify, but I just want to say that right now we're waiting on the Department of Labor to issue guidance on how exactly this program will work, how people will be able to apply, what exact documents will qualify and what won't. And so this is just kind of should be taken as a guidance, but we're waiting on the real rules and regulations right now from the Department of Labor. So to be able to qualify for Tier 1 for that $15,600 total benefit, the applicant has to have filed a tax return for at some point in the last 3 years using a valid ITIN, which is an individual tax identification number, which is a way for folks that don't have a valid Social Security number to still pay taxes. Or, and this is important, or provide a letter from their employer showing a dates of work and why they were let go or are no longer employed. Or they can provide at least 6 weeks of pay stubs or wage statements from the previous 6 months. Or they can provide a W-2 or 1099. And there might be other ways that the Department of Labor identifies, but for now, that's what's included in the actual law. if you're an undocumented worker that is able to provide at least one of those documents, there's a very good chance that you would be eligible for that tier one. If you can't, the Commissioner of Labor will create a point system that will include a number of additional different documents, maybe bank statements, receipts, attestations from a nonprofit, other things that could allow you to benefit from that tier two $3,200 benefit. And so we know that, you know, for undocumented folks, documentation and being able to have these kind of solid proof documents is not always easy. And so this is one way to ensure that more people can at least take advantage of some part of the program.
Well, that is a lot to unpack, and I want to go through some of it right away. So first of all, when I think about the fact that if you make more than $26,000, you don't qualify, it's kind of head-scratching for me, because if I think about, you know, maybe if I'm a family of four and I have one income and that income is $30,000 and that was diminished, that seems, for lack of a better word, insane to me that you would be cut off. Is there any reason that you think it makes sense to have an income threshold that low for this program?
No, but I totally agree. And, you know, what we consider poverty wages in this country is abysmal, unfortunately. And we all know that the federal poverty line hasn't changed in decades, what is considered federal poverty. We also know that the federal minimum wage, grateful that we have a higher minimum wage here in New York State, but even if you work 40 hours a week at the federal minimum wage, you're living in poverty. Unfortunately, that was the number the legislature decided on.
And you mentioned that one of the ways people can qualify is if their employer will essentially verify that they had their work diminished or their income diminished, if they otherwise couldn't prove it via, you know, pay stubs. Do you have any sense that employers are going to come out and basically say, this is a person I'm paying off the books, please take care of them?
You know, I think it will really vary. I do think that there are some employers, and I should say that there are many strong protections written into the law to prevent this targeting of employers who do provide those letters, and more importantly, targeting of workers who apply for this fund. Similarly to the Green Light Driver's License law, the Fund for Excluded Workers prohibits any sharing of any information for immigration enforcement purposes. And so that would include for employers who sign these letters.
And after a quick break, we'll continue our conversation about the Excluded Workers Fund in the state budget with our guest, the New York Immigration Coalition's Anu Joshi.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. UnionStrongNY.com for more information.
We're continuing our conversation about the Excluded Workers Fund in the state budget, which puts aside $2 billion to provide assistance to undocumented New Yorkers who are shut out of federal pandemic relief assistance over the past year. Before the break, our guest, Anu Joshi, Vice President of Policy at the New York Immigration Coalition, was explaining the implementation of the program and how it left a lot of authority up to the State Department of Labor. So I asked Anu, with so much left to be decided, would advocacy groups like the New York Immigration Coalition continue to lobby the Cuomo administration and the Labor Department to influence what the final product looks like?
Implementation is the most critical component of making sure any program is successful, right? The fund will only be as successful as many people who are eligible take advantage of it. And so I think you hit the nail on the head when you said we need to make sure that the Department of Labor implements a program that actually allows people to qualify, that is expansive in the number of documents that they will accept, is expansive in the ideas of trying to work with people to prove their eligibility. How can we be creative about what documents or how people can prove that they have lost income, that they are in desperate need of this fund, as we did with the green light law that opened driver's license access to undocumented immigrants. It was all about the details. How can people really get access to this? What documents do people have? I think the other thing that's tough is that, you know, for a lot of undocumented folks, they have not been able to access or won't be able to access, for example, their home country consulate because of the pandemic. And so, you know, maybe they don't have an unexpired, even foreign passport. And so how can we work with the Department of Labor to make sure that we understand the world that we're living in right now and have been for the last year and make this as expansive as possible?
Do you have a sense, geographically speaking, of where this money is going to go? I saw a report from the Fiscal Policy Institute that broke down the potentially 290,000 workers that would benefit. And I thought it was interesting to see the thousands of eligible New Yorkers living outside of the five boroughs.
Yeah. So, the Fiscal Policy Institute estimates that about 213,000 eligible folks live in New York City, but about 35,000 live on Long Island, 20,000 in the lower Hudson Valley, 9,000 in the mid-Hudson, 4,000 in the Capital Region, and 9,000 in northern and western New York. And I should just note that, you know, we know from decades of research, when the government puts money into the hands of folks that are really struggling, these low-wage workers, folks that have had a loss of income, we know that that money goes directly back into the community. That money is immediately, you know, spent on basic needs, on food, on diapers, on formula, and so really serves as an economic boost to those regions. That money is being spent in local stores, is being, you know, on local sales tax, and so is really a boon to the economic benefits for that region as well.
Well, speaking of the benefits, you know, in terms of the most efficient and beneficial way to help excluded workers who lost income during the pandemic, would the better public policy have been for the state to create this fund last year and distribute benefits as they were needed to eligible New Yorkers?
I mean, of course, but all you have to do is look at how long it took the federal government to, you know, get their act together and extend unemployment. And every time it comes down to the wire and, you know, just with the last rescue plan that was just passed in last month, they did extend unemployment, but now, you know, benefits are only increased by $300 instead of the $600 that was before. So, you know, we know that government works slowly, unfortunately, and it has been at the expense of these families struggling. But what I'll say is that, you know, this fund is a historic investment in the recovery of immigrant New Yorkers that will resonate into the future. And so it is still critically important that they pass it this year.
Do you have a sense of where the $2.1 billion is coming from? For instance, are we accessing federal dollars or is this being done solely with, you know, state tax revenue?
We are not accessing federal dollars, although the state did get, you know, as every state did with the rescue plan, much needed investment from the federal government to help fill some of the holes that the pandemic caused in our state budget. Because of various federal laws, this money is coming entirely from state tax revenue.
The program, as you mentioned earlier, is going to be administered by the State Department of Labor, which I think would be fair to say bungled the deployment of unemployment benefits last year. So considering that, how concerned are you about the efficiency and timeliness of this process moving forward?
I think we have to be vigilant. As you know, you mentioned before, I think it's going to be incredibly important for the advocates and the folks that have been fighting for this fund for months now to, you know, remain focused on how the fund is implemented and to continue putting pressure on DOL, Department of Labor, to get it right. to make sure that it is accessible and expansive. And it also means that our job's not over. We're planning on instituting a comprehensive outreach and education program, working in partnership with the Fund Excluded Workers Coalition. And we're going to make sure that our communities have the information they need to apply for the funds. And if there are barriers or stumbles that come up once the fund is implemented, working hard to quickly address those and using whatever political pressure we need to make sure that that happens.
You're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're breaking down funding in the state budget to provide unemployment benefits and stimulus checks to undocumented New Yorkers. And our guest is Anu Joshi of the New York Immigration Coalition. Are you anticipating any sort of hesitancy among potential applicants?
Yeah, of course. We can't pretend like the 4 years of the Trump administration didn't happen. And, you know, undocumented New Yorkers, understandably, are going to probably face fear of coming forward and sharing their personal information with a government entity. And so that's why, you know, the privacy protections and the protections in the law were written to be incredibly strong, so we could provide, you know, that level of certainty to applicants. But it's really going to be on us and on the state of New York, on the Department of Labor, on the Attorney General's office and others to ensure that we do the outreach we need to let folks know that this is something that they can safely apply for if, you know, for these life-saving funds in many cases. So it will be an uphill battle, and that's on all of us. That's on all of us to ensure that folks know that this will be a safe place to apply.
When can people start applying?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. I don't know. We're waiting on the Department of Labor, and we hope soon, but I don't actually have a timeline that I can share with you.
But you're anticipating a narrow window for applications?
Honestly, I don't know. You know, our ask is that it be longer for precisely the reason you just mentioned, that we know people are going to be hesitant at first. And so once the fund is opened and we have the opportunity to try to do some of that deep community outreach, but that's going to take time. It's also going to take time for people to gather documents, right? Like to be able to have all of the proof that they need to hopefully qualify for the tier one $15,000. Dollar benefit, but at least to qualify for that tier two $3,200 benefit. And so we have to be flexible to give people the time that they need to submit all of that documentation.
This might be a question where the answer is it's up to the Department of Labor to decide, but maybe you know it right now. Is money going to be allocated on a first come, first serve basis or some other sort of mechanism?
I do not know that. I don't know the answer to that. I mean, based off of the eligibility requirements that were outlined in the law, you know, our hope is that anyone who is eligible will be able to receive the funds.
But at some point, theoretically, if there's more than $2 billion in eligible New Yorkers, people could theoretically get shut out?
Theoretically, yes. I think at that point, it would be a renewed effort to figure out what to do to ensure that no one who is eligible was shut out of the program. And if that means this, you know, going back to the legislature and the governor to pass some sort of supplemental or whatever, you know, whatever that looks like, I think we're prepared to do that.
The governor, when doing his budget wrap-up speech, made a big deal of saying the comptroller and attorney general had some sort of oversight function of the fund. What's your understanding of what's either written into the budget with regards to this? And do you have any sense of how it will actually play out, especially in light of recent statements from Comptroller DiNapoli and Attorney General James, which basically downplayed any role they might play moving forward?
Yeah. I mean, we know that the Attorney General James, she's already issued a statement that her role, as is the case in, you know, most state-run programs, is to ensure the integrity of the process. Just by verifying whether the regulations and the process being established to administer the funds and all of these new processes that will be created are constitutional. And frankly, that's, you know, the Attorney General's role, whether or not the governor, you know, makes this proclamation, right? And you're absolutely right. The comptroller, I'm not sure that there's a formal role for him to play. And He did say that there's no requirement for him to formally sign off or certify the parameters of how the money will be distributed by the Department of Labor. And so, you know, I'm not really sure if he has a formal role to play. There's a lot written into the law to ensure that this money gets to the people who need it and who the legislature intended to get the money. And so, you know, we hope that all layers of government, the AG, Department of Labor, and others work to make sure that that happens.
Stimulus checks and federal unemployment benefits were not taxed by the federal government, but the state is taxing unemployment at the state level. Will these benefits be taxed?
Yeah, they will be taxed. So that was just a part of the process of getting it through the legislature.
You mentioned at the start that the provision for previously incarcerated New Yorkers was not included in this. What was envisioned in the original Excluded Workers Fund, and why was it important from the perspective of advocates to include this part of the population?
People who were released, you know, immediately prior to the pandemic, and those who were released in large part, because of the pandemic, and the ability to find work, which is already a struggle, would be almost impossible as a recently incarcerated person being released during the pandemic. And so, you know, these folks would have the same kind of need to provide for themselves and for their families. And so it would be really important for the state to recognize that and to step up in this moment of national crisis.
So if someone is curious about whether they're eligible, is there any sort of outlet that they can turn to right now for information about that?
Yeah, folks can go to fundexcludedworkers.org, which is the coalition website. It will have information available about what documents people can start getting prepared as new information is rolled out from the Department of Labor. That site will be updated, and it will be multilingual. And so we really encourage people to go to fundexcludedworkers.org to get the latest information.
Our guest has been Anu Joshi, Vice President of Policy at the New York Immigration Coalition. Anu, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare. Join us again for Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.